nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
We start talking about topics that I will cover today, which, well, I'll hopefully finish covering today, which is salt precipitation. We started talking about dendrite formation. Finally, question four, which is talking about dendrite growth. I basically, using real numbers from the literature, I ask you how to predict when dendrite growth will occur or when the SCI layer will form, and basically all these side reactions, all these non-idealities that that we have been hinting, and hopefully today I will describe in more detail, and we will include that on your description. Okay, so well, and that's the homework. I'm sorry it took so long to post it. After a while, I realized that, well, instead of posting two homework back to back, I think it would be better to just post one of them. Okay. I had fun writing it. I hope you have fun doing it. I can see your smiles there. Okay, so I want to talk about the numerical part of the homework, but I still need to incorporate an element to the model that you're going to be playing with. So for that, I want to remind you a little bit of what we've been doing, right? By this point, you should be very familiar with this reaction, right? We have that, in general, we know we want that an interface lithium is reacted reversibly, at least that's what we ideally want to happen, into lithium plus an electron. So if we're missing either of them, then the reaction shouldn't proceed. And in an ideal world, we want this reaction to proceed reversibly. When we detail it, we assume that there's a host material, and that host material is the one that gives away or stores an electron and a lithium ion. And the interesting part that makes this problem nonlinear is the fact that here, that when we have a particle, you should have here a region in space, a set of vacancies here, where lithium can be stored, otherwise it won't go in. Okay, and we were hypothesizing the existence of a reaction zone active or reaction zone where we can assign there the Butler-Brummer relation, and it is because of that we will have not constant reaction rate as a function of current, but more dependent on what actually happens here and what happens in here, right? If we actually have here on this side reactant, okay? And that's basically what we're discussing. I posted online in the class website, I posted this paper that was that appeared in Nature in 2009. There are parts of this paper that are very controversial. When it came out, what they were claiming is that they can reach, for a lithium iron phosphate, they can reach C rates that reach as high as 50C. Okay, some people still don't believe that. It was very exciting to see it, that they were aiming for these charge rates or discharge rates. What I find extremely exciting, this is one of the figures of the characterization experiment. I think it's an SCM picture. And you can see the rows of atoms there. And outside, you have the electrolyte, right? Basically, the external environment. Okay? And I want you to notice the transition between the inside of the particle to the outside of the particle. Right? And I'm going to try to highlight it, right? That's roughly where the inside of the particle is. And this region that I'm about to deanimate, right, that's the interface. That's where all the action is happening. Okay? And they claim that for these really small particles, okay, if you engineer the interface to maximize the reaction rate, you can have very high C rates. Which means you can put in and out material really fast, Okay, but if the reaction here is very slow, you won't get the reaction that you want. Okay, and that's my point here, right? That across an interface, you can see here, this is, if this distance is 5 nanometers, I can claim that, or I can eyeball it to this distance to be somewhere between, I don't know, this distance then, delta is somewhere between 1 to maybe 3 nanometers. Okay, it's a very small region in space. You can think of a region in space where the local atomic interactions, the details of the atomic interactions become very important. But at the same time, right, statistically, the thickness of that layer, and let me just animate it a little, again, what occurs in that interface is such that you're going from a highly crystalline region to an amorphous region. Okay? And, I mean, there are all sorts of things that from there we can start speculating. Like, for example, the fact that in this direction there will be some basal planes, right? Some crystallographic directions where I would expect the reaction to occur faster, right? Of course, there's no evidence backing this up, right? But, given that crystallography demands that some directions will have, maybe higher defects than others. In fact, there is evidence that if you can have amorphous surfaces, and depending on what the crystallography is, you will have thicker interfaces in some directions and thinner in others, right? And that will make that interface more reactive in some directions and less reactive in others, right? And that, I think, it's very, very interesting because it gives a whole other dimension of what happens at these interfaces. So just to elaborate a bit more, and well, I'm just going to write here the Butler-Bromer relationship again, where I have my I naught, which is a function of the stuff that is going in and out, times e to the minus alpha c zf eta over rt. I think actually that's a plus e to the minus alpha a zf eta over rt. Okay. The overpotential is the deviation from equilibrium at that interface, right? That's how we built it. Okay. If this interface is truly at equilibrium, nothing is going to go in and out. That's how we wrote it, right? That's how we defined it. Okay, at this interface of thickness delta, okay, you should expect, okay, that if I impose a current there, because of, you can see the amorphous nature of that boundary, you should expect an ohmic drop. Even if I put a very small current, I should expect a tiny drop there. In fact, I can associate with that a resistance. I'm going to call that resistance R, and I'm going to give it IN for interface. I'm going to call this number the contact resistance. And it's going to embody all the non-idealities, the amorphous nature, the fact that there's other stuff, there's what I'm going to call it in this case, its spatial nature, all its non-idealities that I don't understand, but I'm still going to assign that there's something here limiting the rate at which I put things inside. I'm going to put that all of it inside, okay, in this 2-3 nanometer layer, okay, considering that this thing is, you know, something really big, right, and over there I have microns of material facing the counter electrode. This tiny region, which is where all the action happens. Okay, so if I have a current density going there, okay, I'm gonna here put a little arrow, then that means that if I have a current density, right, this is the local current density. This is the electrons and lithium ions rushing to that interface. Okay, then if you believe Ohm's law, then I can say that the drop across that interface has to be, or I can propose it to be, I should better say, okay, where this one has units of amps per meter square, that one has units of volts, okay, so then it should It should, if you go over the units, you will find that this one, that interface has units of ohms times meter square. Okay? So that I get, when I multiply ohms times amps per meter, I get ohms times amps, which gives me volts, right? Because that's how you, I mean, that would be the Ohm's law, right, in its full form. And basically, this is just one type of model. This is called the contact resistance model. Okay, and attempts to capture the non-idealities of that interface. Okay, the drop that occurs. And you can see, right, that if I have no current, then there's no deviations from equilibrium, right, by construction, right? No current, no deviations by equilibrium, no reaction. Nothing goes in or out. Okay, if I reverse the current, then the reaction reverses as well. Okay? In the models that we will see in the next few weeks, it builds on top of that. It truly builds on top of that. Okay? There are other models that don't believe on this, that they do other things, and we'll discuss that as well. Okay? I wanted to show that because, trying to emphasize the point that all the action is occurring there, right? That's the crux of the problem when it comes to engineering a battery. Without what happens there, really, you don't have a battery, okay? Without the action occurring there, okay? Now, I say this, and I'm going to break out of the presentation here for a minute, and I want to... Well, hopefully I'm online. I want to show you one of those models and compare them to the case where you have a constant current without those losses. Okay. Let's see. Hopefully I'll be online. Okay. I'm going to the NanoHub, my account. Okay. Let's just launch another one. Okay. Just want to show you the interface of that so you can tell the difference. Oh, I'm going to have to pop it out. So we played with this one, diffusion on a sphere. Okay. And there's also a diffusion on a platelet and diffusion on a cylinder, right? I'm going to run this one just to remind you of the setup. You remember we have impose a current, right? That current times divided by F, by Faraday's constant, gives you how much mass actually you're bringing in. You have the radius, initial concentration, diffusion constant, and simulation time, right? And we run that, and, well, we get what we expect, right? We got basically concentration coming in, right? This is, if you remember, this is a 200-second simulation. The solubility limit is somewhere over here. And notice at that point, the model has broken. It doesn't work anymore because we have reached the solubility limit. And that's just in physics, right? And that just keeps going up, right? So at some point, you're going to have to admit to yourselves that there's a limitation there, okay? So that's what that model does, okay? And I'm going to quit that model, right? We've discussed those details already last class, okay? And for every geometry... Okay, we have also a one that is called, instead of diffusion, it's called Butler-Bomer. Okay, in this case, you can see there's a Butler-Bomer cylinder, a Butler-Bomer platelet, and I think I just missed the Butler-Bomer sphere. Where did that go? Ah, there you go. There. Okay, without going into the details on how that code exactly works, you're free to play with it. It's just the diffusion equation coupled with the Butler-Bomer relation. I'm going to run that one now. Okay. And the menu just substantially increases. Okay. Because now you still have the current density at the interface. You still have that current density. Okay. You have a contact resistance. In this case, the contact resistance is written here as Z. Okay. Capital Z is the contact resistance. Okay. It has units of ohms times meter square. You have the particle size like we had before. Okay. You have the initial concentration, also like we had before, the solubility limit. Okay. In this case, notice that it actually enters the solubility limit. Why we need the solubility limit? Because we need to specify the limitations here. And just to expand on that, so you can see where all the numbers are entering now, KR C to the 1/2 times CT minus C to the 1/2, right, which is what enters there. Okay, now we have that in there. The diffusivity of the bulk and alpha A and alpha C, right, which are these numbers over here. Okay? What you can control, okay, you can even break them to the point where alpha A plus alpha C is not equal to 1. I would not recommend that, but you're certainly allowed to do that. And I'm going to run it also for 200 seconds, roughly. There you go. I'm just going to run it. Okay? The exact same thing. Note that you remember that after 200 seconds, the previous particle, battery particle, will completely pass the solubility limit, right? In this case, we get to this place. We get the particle concentration. Okay, and there it goes. And you also have the particle voltage. Notice that it's going up, but as it goes up, again, the solubility limit is like over there. Okay, the voltage of the particle, you can see it's around 4 because we're talking about a lithium manganese oxide particle. It just keeps going, right? It just keeps going there. Okay. And notice how it has slowed down significantly. Why is that? Why did it slow down? As compared to before, it just kept going up, you know, full blast. You know, it saturated the surface with lithium, and it just kept going up regardless. In fact, it went way beyond that. And notice that now it actually has basically stopped there. It's pretty much pinned at that value. Okay, after 200 seconds, it's still there, right? And actually, the core of the particle is catching up, as compared to before, where the surface just keeps going up. Okay, and the core just was left behind, always left behind. And here, it's still there. After 200 seconds, you can see the voltage has dropped. It's not too bad. It's okay. We can deal with that, right? The voltage of the particle is around 4 volts. It's coming down. It never actually reaches the cutoff voltage of 3 in this case. It just keeps going, right? Especially since I only run it for 270 seconds. So why is it now that I never actually went beyond that? I actually get something much more realistic. Why is that? Right. Exactly. So now I have a solubility limit. If you remember, and that's why I spent time talking about those plots, right, where if I plot this term, which is what modulates how much stuff come in or out, I mean, this one controls the strength of a reaction, right, giving the overpotential, right, or if you prefer, given the external current that you apply. In this case, this term, if I plot it, did you remember, it was doing something like this, right, where this limit is CT. So when you're very close for the reaction rate to stop, when you're close to the solubility limit, the reaction rate starts slowing down and doesn't completely reach this point. Why? Because now you're giving a chance for the bulk of the sample to catch up. You have slowed the surface reaction so you can make from the surface to the bulk, you have given it enough time for that part to recover. Therefore, well, the power of that particle basically drops, right? So you, with that, you allow other particles to take over, right? But what happens with this particle at that point is that the power that it's taking in, drops, allowing for the bulk to catch up. That is a good thing because it gives us a chance to put more lithium in that particle. Okay, but at the same time, the power of that particle also drops. And actually, this one, notice that even for that C rate, there's still around like 10% difference between the surface and the core, meaning that I'm still not using 10% of what's on the back. Okay, and well, we can do things. We can do other things. Obviously, we can go back here and change the particle size. Let's see. At this point, it's set to 10 microns. I'm going to put it, set it to 1 micron and rerun the whole thing. Actually, I managed to completely kill it. It was just too much for it. Let me restart the simulation. Oh, here it is. Yeah, it's gone. It was just too much current for such a tiny particle. It just completed it in the first instant and it just stopped. Let's run it again. So instead of doing that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to increase the current a little bit from 1. I may not be able to. I think this specific model has a very, is very sensitive to variations. Let's see if I run it. Do I get what I want? In this case, I made it, I dropped the current by an order of magnitude, so basically very little is going on, and the voltage barely does anything. Okay? I'm going to start again, 1 sec. Not that one, and of course that one is blocked. Okay, I want to show other effects. For example, the contact resistance. What do you think will happen if I make the contact resistance higher? Will it want to intercalate more or less? If I make this number higher for fixed current, what should happen? Should I put more in or less? What?
Less.
Why? Why less?
Because there's more resistance to
it. So you're saying it's less because there's more resistance. Okay, but this number is bigger now. Right? If this number is bigger, keeping that fixed, then this number should be bigger, right? And if I put that one in there, well, that one is basically shut down, so I can just focus on this one. This one grows exponentially. You agree with that? So, doesn't it sound that it should be more? You're right, though. You should get less overall. But I'm really here playing devil's advocate, right? Because you do expect to get more per unit second as the resistance increases, because now there's a larger drop here. It really wants to go in. It's really deviating from equilibrium, okay, as you pass that current. But as you're putting more in, you don't let the bulk to recover. So you effectively put total less amount of charge because you get to this end of the discharge sooner on the surface, and the bulk cannot keep up. So yes, it's at that point you would have to make your particle smaller, right, to be able to get the response that you want. Okay, that's the reason. So yes, but it's a bit more complicated. So let's do that, right? Let's go 0.23. Let's bring it over there. They're just going to run the same thing. And notice it immediately reaches the surface of the particle sooner. Remember that it started in the other case at a voltage higher than 4. Now the voltage is lower than 4 for that particle. Why? Because now the voltage of the particle is such that I have to subtract the losses of the interface. If you remember, before the voltage of the battery was a result of the losses from the bulk, right, from the separator, from the porous region, right? You remember this, right? We were accounting for all this in the reaction zone model. We accounted for all these individual losses. Right now, we have an additional loss. The losses of the interface as well, which is playing. And actually notice that in this case, the voltage is getting closer to 3. Okay? And if you look here, right, actually, you have a steeper gradient in the bulk, right? And I have reached the surface much sooner, okay? So now the back is also catching up, okay? And it'll probably, what will happen is actually the shape of the voltage curve is going to be smoother, because as this surface remains pretty much pinned at the very end, basically this point right now is not exactly here, okay? It's actually a few points below, maybe it's like about here, you know, just putting enough to to allow the system to recover. Okay, and I want to talk about that too. This is important. This is very important. Okay, this effect that you see here. Okay, this is a numerical error that you're going to be dealing with. Okay, so what happens here? Okay, is that the surface has reached is right below the solubility limit, and in the next time step, you pump in lithium, so you bring it over here. Okay, and when you do that. Okay, the system basically shuts down. Okay, and in the next time step, it comes back there. So that's what causes those oscillations. That's not a physical result. That's a numerical issue in this case. Okay, in this case, the code was written to be as faithful as possible to reality. So those oscillations that you see there is the system jumping, the surface of the particle jumping from this side to that side, not allowing the system to relax. And how do you fix that? Well, let's run it again. Still has some time to go. But the reason it does that, and this is going to be important, you can see there actually the text, right, telling you, I have gone over the solubility limit, which is physically not realistic. And as a result of that, the interpolation function that I used to set the voltage, basically the ones that we posted, the ones that we've been using on the project for the from Doyle is the exact same function put there. Basically, I go over the side, so that's what's causing those oscillations. Okay. Now, how do you get rid of that? Let me wait until it finishes because I really want to show that comparison. And again, you can see as it goes, it's really just going over that, and they're just telling you at this point what you get is just not physical anymore. Okay. The way to fix it is by making the time step smaller. So that in one discrete time step, instead of jumping over the solubility limit, it creeps up slowly. So it actually never touches it. The way the systems are set up, the current density should slow down to zero as you reach this point. But, and that happens with many models, if your time step is too large, you will go over the limit. And you will get things that are unphysical. It'll give the impression of having an electrical oscillation, but you don't. I hope it's done. Yes. Okay. Let's rerun the same thing. But now I'm going to change the time step. And this is the kind of thing you're going to have to play with. Okay. The problem with doing it in a blow up screen is that I have less space to work with. But just like before, I also have time step. In this case, the time step is arbitrarily set to 1 second. Okay, to get a good simulation, I would probably have to drop it. Let me drop it to 0.4. I don't know if this is going to fix it, but there's one way to find out. Now I have my voltage, which is important. Okay, and I have my concentration. I have a much accurate depiction of my simulation now. Okay, notice that it's cranking up really fast to the surface, so actually having a higher resistance at the interface is making things happen sooner because the system is deviating from equilibrium sooner. But then notice what happens, right? It's stopping there. Sometimes you get that effect really soon. And again, you shouldn't blame it on the specific theoretical equations, that the actual theory associated with that. It really has to do with when you discretize it and solve for the concentration at the surface. Numerically, if you go over the limit, it's telling you that there's something unphysical going on. Okay? In some cases, you have to play with the time step and sometimes make it very small so that you actually get there asymptotically and basically you actually never touch the limit. Okay? Or if you touch it, it sits there. Okay? Completely. Never actually moves away. Okay? And there are a lot of numerical tricks to do that, but in this case, we basically put there the simplest thing so that you can be exposed to what would happen in a real code if you don't do the right thing. Okay. And well, in this case, you can see how the bulk is finally starting to catch up because the reactions at the surface are slowing down. Okay. And, well, at some point, that concentration, which is compensating for what's occurring in the core, okay, will not be able to compensate there. And then the surface will get much closer again to the surface concentration. And if it does it right, okay, if you set up the numerics right, you shouldn't get those oscillations. Okay, if you have those oscillations, then your calculation is not realistic. Okay? Any questions on this? Because that's the kind of stuff you're going to be dealing with when you do your homework. And, of course, for the final project, I expect you to discuss things like this. Not, I don't mean the numerics, but incorporate the effects of actually the Butler-Bomber reactions, to incorporate the effects of irreversible reactions like lithium growth, just like we discussed last time. Okay, all of those additional things you will have to discuss in your project. Questions? Okay. Okay, then I'm going to go back to the lecture. I'm going to let that go, I think. Oh, this still has a while to go, but you can see that the voltage is dropping as a result of now you still have the ohmic drops there, right? And notice that before, in the very first step, it went to a concentration below 4. And once I decreased the time step, it actually got a bit closer. Did you notice that? And that's because in the previous calculation that had a time step of 1 second, the time step was 2 cores. So it was giving me an estimate, but not as accurate as the one I have right now. Okay, so when you run a simulation, you have to play with the time step and mesh size as well. You can do that again with what you have here. So I'm going to close that. And I'm going to terminate the process. Okay. And I'm going to quit Java. There you go. And I'm going to go back to the class. Okay, let's see. I'm going to have the break here. It doesn't make any sense to start something. Yeah, let's have a 5-minute break right here, and we'll continue. Yeah, nice interface. What we would likely like to have. Okay. And I want to then remind you of what we were doing regarding dendrite growth. Last time I made a case for having a very complex system when it comes to dendrite formation, right? And energetically, if you remember that picture, I'm going to keep that one. We do have a contact resistance that is what's driving the system. But there are all sorts of things going on at that interface. The moment you submerge your battery material, your active material in an electrolyte, all sorts of things start to happen, all sorts of irreversible reactions. The map, the sketch that we made about the energetics, if you guys remember, there was a baseline outside the material. There's an energy barrier here. And inside, once we have gone over the barrier, then we have the lattice resistance for diffusion inside the system, right? And depending on whatever potential we put, okay, we can you can look at it as either move this baseline up and down, or that you're moving this one up and down, right? It just depends on what is your reference point that this one moves, right? You can make it look like this, or to make the barrier small so that it actually comes downhill, or you can move it the other way so that it does that. So you can play with both cases. As you apply that over potential, you can see here as eta less than 0 and eta greater than 0, right, the over potential, right? And together with that, you have also other energetics. Other reactions going on, okay? And in this case, we were describing that when we have a surface, say, of Li XC6, for small over potentials, I do get stuff coming in and out reversibly, right? And I do have my concentration gradient. But for large over potentials, I will start accessing these other energetic wells, right? Let's just say somewhere up here, I have an Li well, right? A pure lithium well, which would mean that at some point, for a high enough potential, high enough recharge rate, I will start forming here my lithium precipitate. Okay, and we discussed that, right? And these precipitates, right, basically grow against the counter electrode, and the moment they hit the counter electrode, then at that point, then you have an internal short, and the battery dies, or you have a big mess. Okay? We don't want any of them. Okay, because the moment these form, right? Let's just say the moment it reaches that energy barrier, then it's more accessible to get there. Okay, there are others down here, irreversible reactions, and some of them, just from putting the particle in contact of the electrolyte, you will deposit stuff there until you have completely filled the vacancies of that reaction. In some cases, they never get filled. They just keep accumulating more and more. Okay, I want to talk about that in a second. And, well, here in this case, you can think of this as being heterogeneous nucleation in the sense that lithium forms in these like blotches right on the surface, right? There is some incubation time, some time that you have to wait. And that'll take some time. The other case is instead of having the graphite particle, the lithiated graphite particle, you're still, and this is one of the reasons why, actually this is the reason why pure lithium anodes, even though they have a much higher capacity than graphite, as we saw in the at the very beginning of the semester, you can have an Li substrate. And, well, ideally, you would want to plate this, right, so that it moves at a constant velocity V out of that, right? But if you have, I'm going to put here, I'm going to call these some perturbations, or if you prefer, I guess technically the phrase here is a morphological instability. Okay? Then once these form, one of them is going to take off, and you're going to have the same problem. In this case, because you already have lithium there, all you need is a small perturbation, electrical or chemical, and this thing will take off. Okay? And the things that we've been talking about is that either it can be driven by stuff coming through the tip, which would be tip controlled, or by stuff coming here through the back, right? Either material is coming through the back and pushing the dendrite to the front, or maybe, we don't know that, right? Stuff is coming from the substrate itself, the graphite particle itself. Or in this case, you can see if I have a pure lithium electrode, there's nothing stopping that one from pushing the dendrite up from the bottom. Okay, so we have those two mechanisms, or the possibility of those two mechanisms, tip controlled or base control. Okay? Regardless of the nature of how that form or how that occurs, okay, in either case we don't want it. Okay? We would like to completely avoid the problem. Now, what has been done about this problem? Technically, practically speaking, to inhibit dendrite formation, it shouldn't be a surprise, and actually we kind of already talked about that, that if instead we put a low current to this setup, okay, the chances of accessing that and overcoming that energy barrier become smaller, okay, and then the system doesn't grow, okay, which that would mean technically low current density charging, basically doing it at a slow rate, and that's why in many cases, in many batteries, when you recharge your battery, you spend, I don't know, 8 hours, right, or 10 hours, right, to recharge your cell. Why? Because you're doing it at a small over potential. Okay, so that you don't access that. The assumption here, of course, is that every point in the cell is the same, which is not true. Some spots can have a higher overpotential than others because the surface reaction may not occur homogeneously, right? Even though this particle may be perfectly spherical, its interactions with the surroundings could be different. Okay, and that's very important to specifying what occurs in the cell. Now, and actually, this is the reason why people went from pure lithium anodes to graphite electrodes. Okay? Why? Because, well, if I have a pure lithium anode, I only need a morphological instability and that thing's gonna go. Okay? But if instead I have this, hey, if I just manage to put it all in, okay, in this compound, graphite lithium compound, okay, then I will completely avoid it. And that's great. And there are other, of course, it doesn't have to be graphite, right? You know that there's these titanates that people are using these days, which give you a higher potential than lithium. but they can become very stable and shift this energetic gap further up. So that's important. Okay, that's a way to engineer yourself to minimize that possibility. Okay? You can also use polymeric solid electrolytes. Why? Well, if I put an electrolyte as compared to having this thing that wants to push out, I actually make the background a solid medium that it has to push against. It'll actually have to perform work against that, effectively suppressing its growth. Energetically, when you put elastic energy to something, you're effectively pushing, or you hope to push that energy barrier further up. Okay? Think of that. That jump is going to be a jump proportional to sigma squared over E. E being the Young modulus and sigma being the stress that results from attempting to growth over that. Okay? So that basically makes the nucleation of that to become less likely. Okay? Or at least suppress it. Of course, the moment one of these inhomogeneities result, you will have a non-trivial set of stress that may result in the nucleation of one of those anyway. Okay, the lithium anode that we just talked about, this is one of the things that people are trying recently. Well, maybe I can make it solid. Maybe I can't. Maybe by making it solid, I compromise all the features on the system, but you can put additives on it. And actually, that's a lot of the work that is done on putting things on it to alter the chemistry of the surface so that the likelihood, the energy barrier that has to be overcome increases again so that this doesn't happen. Okay? So, and again, this is what practically people do. The work is empirical in the sense that you have an intellectual baseline on what to do, but practically speaking, you just go and try things in the lab. Okay? Let's see if I have anything. And of course this one seems very impractical. Electrolyte steering, which means you have your liquid electrolyte and you have your counter electrode, and somehow as you're discharging, you're also steering the thing so that you don't give the opportunity for the material to go to a specific region, right? Oh, you won't build a battery like that, right? It's just not practical, right? But that's how people have actually suppressed that process from occurring. Okay. Now, there are two main ways to describe this. This is just theoretically. One assumes that you have bulk diffusion of lithium in the electrolyte, and is the combination of the diffusion limitations in the electrolyte and the electropotential gradients that result that lead into dendrite formation. That model is given, it was a model published by Chasalviel on the 1990s. Okay, it's a very interesting, a little bit long paper. You can see there, 7355 to 7367. That's quite a reading. I would recommend it for a Saturday afternoon. The other one is, accounts or attempts to account for the fact that there's an overpotential shift as a result of the energetics of that nucleus, meaning that there's some surface tension, there's a Laplace pressure, if you may, given by the curvature of that nuclei. And the thought here is that the energetics associated to that interface is, it can accelerate or suppress dendrite growth. Okay, so think of that delta P as being that shift here to make something grow or shrink, right? Depending what the curvature is, and notice R can be positive or negative, you can have this barrier come down or come up depending on what the curvature of your system is. Okay? That's the basic idea. Models are, let's just say they're not simple enough to describe in the context of a class. Conceptually, the results that are used are, in one case, the Laplace pressure. In another case, the fact that you're something that is diffusion limited. I'm going to go over the major results on the next slide. Okay. Again, that model was, developed by Chuck Monroe and Jung Newman, not surprisingly. And, well, these are the most important results from Chasaviel's model. There's, and it shouldn't be surprising, that there's a critical current density, right? There's a specific, if you prefer, giving our reaction zone model, and the fact that we have a voltage drop across the interface, the fact that we have an energetic barrier to overcome, that means that there's a critical overpotential and thus a critical current density that you would have to overcome to start plating. Okay? And that's a result from Chasaviel's model. That's a critical energy density. Notice that that critical energy density turns out to be smaller in the Monroe-Newman's model. Why? Because in this case, you have to still overcome that barrier, but there's an additional shift as a result of the Laplace pressure. Basically, the very, very small nuclei are going to bring the energy barrier down and will allow you to basically reach that growth regime sooner. Okay? The energetics are never discussed, only they discuss the kinetics. Okay? In the case of Chasaviel's model, the implication is that I have to wait some time for either my perturbation to form, which is not surprising because the form of these shapes requires surface diffusion. Okay? And in this case, the nucleation of an embryo will require a local incubation of that nuclei. Okay? In both cases, I guess it feels qualitatively obvious that there should be some waiting period. However, in Newman's model, they propose that you don't have to wait at all. You basically blast it with a current and the thing is going to go. Okay? The difference, of course, is that in the Newman model, they account for an additional shift because of the surface tension. And in the Chasaviel's model, they don't. Okay? That's a difference. So, what I think is the most important thing to walk away with is that in the Chasaviel's model, they assume that the deposition rate, the rate at which this embryo is going to grow, is going to be proportional to the local electric field of the system, okay, given some mobility. So, which means if I apply an electric field to my anode, I know that once I have overcome the incubation time, that dendrite is going to grow linearly in time. Okay, if you prefer, we can write it here. And let's see, what am I going to get rid of? I'm going to get rid of this one. Okay, I'm going to put a line there. We're saying that the velocity of the dendrite is going to be some mobility times the electric field. Okay? And then to set things up mathematically and also in the context of the homework, right, I have the tip of a dendrite that has moved a distance delta from my reference point. Okay? And this dendrite would be growing across a length, I'm going to call that length H, okay, where I have my counter electrode over here. Macroscopically, what people typically do is I can ground this thing and I can apply a macroscopic voltage eta. So I should expect a voltage drop across this thing. Right. There should be here at this interface, okay, an ohmic drop as a result of the stuff that is occurring at the interface. Right. The electric field, if you remember, is the voltage drop across this distance. I'm going to call that distance h again. Okay, noticing that actually, if this is my anode material, actually, somewhere here, maybe actually here, let's just put it here. That's my separator. So I hope you agree that that little equation already is telling us how long we would have to wait to get our dendrite going, given the recharge rate. Right. Why? Because the velocity of the interface is nothing else but the rate at which this size is moving in that direction. Right? So, well, then it shouldn't be hard to do, right? Because if I take that and put it in there, I'm going to put it over here. That is a piece of pie to integrate, right? That's quite straightforward. For the case of h being a constant, right? Or for the case, and actually that's the case I want to do, for the case of delta much smaller than h sub s. Okay, basically, for the case of this tip never making it over there, I can solve for that and I can say that this is a constant basically, so delta is going to be delta naught plus mu eta over h. Or if you prefer, which is telling me what I was expecting, that the tip has to grow linearly, right? So, but that doesn't happen, or you shouldn't expect that to happen in a real battery. Why? Because as this thing gets closer, then the effective distance becomes closer and closer. Okay, so my local over potential should just be cranking up, which means, as Newman suggests, there should be an acceleration of that tip. It should want to go closer as it gets closer to that. Right? Do you see that? Okay. Okay. So, and that's the homework to do the other case, the case where this is not true. That's the case for the homework, to do the non-trivial one. Okay, which shouldn't be too hard. You should get another differential equation that you only have to invert. You should be, and after that, this should be straightforward after that. Okay? And you will see how it accelerates as you get there. And you will then see the separator in completely different light. It not only, if you make it too thin, you basically increase the driving force. But you may decrease the losses as a result of the separator, right? But you increase the likelihood of shooting one of those to the other side, right? But if I make it instead too thick, right, the complete opposite situation, then I have all these losses, right? So what is the optimal thickness? I want a thickness where I don't promote that and my losses as a result of drops across the separator are also minimal. So you have now an additional constraint for your separator, okay, when you design it, okay? It all depends, if you think about it, on this little number over here, right, the mobility of the dendrite tip. Okay, if the dendrite tip is very sluggish, you can get away with long periods of time without doing that. But if you recharge your battery very fast, okay, or it heats up, so the mobility, because also the mobility is also a function of temperature, right? You should expect this thing to become more mobile at higher temperatures. Then you can actually make this thing grow sooner also during recharge. Okay, so there are all these different contributions there that you have to take into account. Okay, and let's see how are we doing in time. Oh, we still have 5 minutes. So, in general, there are other reactions in the system, right? We were just describing it here, right? You have all these different reactions going on. Okay, if you want to account for the reactions of in the generality of the system, right, besides the Butler-Bormer kinetics that you have also to account for the fact that in a real system, you have to add to that interface additional reactions. not only the stuff that is going into the active material, because if you think about it, right, you really have this little box at the interface, okay, where some of it, as it comes here, some of it is coming in here, and some of it is staying here. The stuff that's coming in here is a loss. Not only is a loss, it's a thing that once it propagates can become quite dangerous or quite a failure when it comes to your performance. So overall, what goes in should be a difference into the battery, should be a difference between what you bring into the interface and the losses because of the side reaction. Okay, you have you dump some material there as a result of that. Okay? And what that does is that what occurs here, okay, as you put more stuff here, I hope you agree with me that as I put more stuff at the interface, I make my interface thicker and my contact resistance also larger. Right? Do you see that? In fact, what's known also in battery materials is if you grab a particle of active material and you submerge it into the electrolyte, just from putting it in it, you will immediately develop a coating in the system. Okay? Let's just say whatever free electrons you have there will want to react with the free lithium ions in the electrolyte, forming a coating immediately at the top. Okay? And if that coating is very thin, okay, the contact resistance is going to be very small and very little material is going to go in. So that the battery is going to become very useful when the coating is thick enough that you can put a lot of stuff in there. Okay? But then you will also have had a loss, right? Because you have to grow that interfacial layer. Okay? It's a pro and con, right? I wish I couldn't develop that interface, but then again, my battery reaction depends on it in order to have something coming in. So it's kind of like a mixed blessing there. Okay? Turns out that interface is referred to as the solid electrolyte interface because you have the electrolyte basically depositing there, okay, imposing there a reaction on the system. And let's see, do I have enough time to talk about that? I'm just going to pick it up there on Tuesday. I want to spend some time talking about the SCI. The solid electrolyte interface is a source of what really allows you to have that overpotential at the interface. And at the same time, if you let it grow, it can completely kill your battery. Okay? And that's very important. So, I'll talk about that in more detail on Tuesday. Okay? Any questions? Okay. Then, see you on Tuesday. Have a nice rest of the week.